continuation of this morning's Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management Technology. Appreciate Joan Diaz at the representing the our recording staff, and Sheila Baker is representing us from the Legislative Fiscal Office as we move into items 7, 8, and 9 on the agenda. And let's see, 7 deals with DHS, the Director's Office.
Good afternoon. Excuse me, is this thing, can you hear me all right? I guess you can hear me all right in this small room anyway. For your record, my name is John Cuddy, and I'm the Chief Information Officer of the Department of Human Services. And the first thing we're here to talk to you about today is the what's now been renamed with one of our fun, meaningful acronyms, the EXPRESS system. It used to be called Mental Health Payment System, and it really stems from our need to revise the way we make and process payments, especially because of the large volume that's come in on account of the Staley decision. And Jack Morgan from our Seniors and People with Disabilities group is here to start what we're going to talk to you about this afternoon as part of our update on where we are. Jack's going to talk about it from the business and program side.
For the record, I'm Jack Morgan, manager of the Program Development Section for Seniors and People with Disabilities. And with your permission, I'll provide a little bit of background about this project and walk the committee through the scope of the project as it's been defined to date. The project is one that's designed to replace a system that makes payments for developmental disability services, mental health services, and alcohol and drug services that are not included in the Oregon Health Plan. So these are community-based services that are delivered by counties and providers under intergovernmental agreements between the department and county governments. There's about $800 million a biennium that is paid out through this system over a biennium. The system currently operates with very old technology. There are a couple of databases that are linked together. One of them was built in the 1970s. It was not designed as a payment system. Functionality was added so that we could use it for that purpose. There are also is an R-based system that is obsolete and no longer supported by the manufacturer. There's only a few large counties that actually have the capacity to submit claims electronically. The others submit using paper forms, and the data is hand-entered into the system in Salem. The normal payment cycle for a number of the services paid through the system is 3 months. Then also, if a claim is not processed in that normal cycle, a provider must wait for the final settlement process, which could take years. So this system is currently undermining the department's ability to maintain an effective business relationship with both counties and providers. The handout that Sheila gave you defines the project scope. And I'll review that with you briefly just so everybody's clear about what's included in the scope of this project and what is not. The scope of the project is to include the development and implementation of a federally certified payment system that provides efficient means of payment for approved Medicaid services. It covers only the services in developmental disabilities, mental health, and alcohol and drug services that are not included in the Oregon Health Plan. The project itself is using a phased approach to system development so that each phase will deliver a piece of the total product. Activities that are not included in the scope of the project include development of a system architecture that encompasses the entire payment management process from contract execution through final payment. Report generation functions that are needed to satisfy the primary reporting needs of users, including counties and service providers, as well as users within the department. It includes system access functions that utilize internet connections based on defined user roles that are structured in ways that comply with all security and confidentiality requirements of state and federal governments. It includes an enrollment and termination function that allows counties to enroll clients and service providers online directly into the payment system. It includes a prior authorization functions that operate at multiple levels to provide department and county staff with both the flexibility to manage funds and control that is needed to manage the contract expenditures at both the state and the county level. It includes payment request functions that offer service providers the opportunity to initiate and then monitor the status of payment requests online. It includes data management functions that address requirements of the federal government, federal Medicaid agency for identification, tracking, and reporting on Medicaid services and expenditures. It includes system administration functions that provide ongoing system support and maintenance with sufficient flexibility to support changes in business requirements over time. The system will replace a couple of database programs. One is called the Community Contracts Database. The second is a Community Accounting Payments Database. It also replaces an interface database with a direct interface to the statewide financial management application and the Treasury's Phoenix banking system. It will convert and load the historical payment information that's been collected in the RBase system and import that into the Express database. Things that are not included in the scope of this project is replacement of the client process monitoring system, the CPMS system. It will replace only the functionality in that system that supports payment processing. All of the other functionality will be retained for continued use by the department for other purposes, such as performance monitoring, federal reporting, and research. There are a number of business practices in budgeting, accounting, and contracting that must be aligned to implement the Express system and take advantage of the improved capacity. These activities are outside the scope of the Express project, but the project has developed a business reengineering plan that will make sure that the changes, those work activities are coordinated. The system will not change business requirements, alter the fundamental role alignments between the department, counties, and service providers, or store detailed information on client eligibility or provider qualifications or licensing reports. Those are outside the scope.
So do I understand from that, Mr. Morgan, that this would be outside of the confidentiality base for HIPAA?
Mr. Chairman, it will include, it will have to be HIPAA compliant. However, this is not one of the package programs that integrates a lot of the case management functions along with the payment functions. This is strictly a payment system.
What I'm going to look for today is to figure out a way to have the federal government on one of these 90-10 deals pick up the cost of HIPAA, our state's HIPAA compliance, if we can do that somewhere. So keep that in mind, John. Thank you. Please proceed.
The last point, again, in terms of things that are not included in the scope of this project, are payments that are made under the Oregon Health Plan for mental health services. Those payments will continue to be made by the Department's Office of Medicaid Assistance Programs.
What is an RBase system? You're talking to somebody who's not computer literate here.
Well, nor am I, so I'll let John explain the RBase.
It's actually, Mr. Chair, it's older than I am. RBase is a one of the original personal computer databases came out, I don't know, in the early 80s, I think, and is no longer really in use that I know of, other than in these kind of old systems that are still hanging around.
I see. Okay, are there any other questions for Mr. Cuddy or Mr. Morgan? Sheila?
Actually, I was going to talk to you about the project.
You were going to talk to us about the project.
Yeah, do you want me to do that now?
Yeah,
or?
You've got 5.5 seconds.
Okay. I'll be like that fellow on TV in the commercial. One piece of good news, we do now have, Mr. Chair, you mentioned 90% federal, and we do have federal approval formally for 90% funding for this. As we said to the committee on several occasions in the past, we've had trouble hiring staff, and that has slowed us up considerably. We've still kept moving forward, but we've had trouble getting people hired. We do now have a project manager, and of the 9 technical positions, we have 2 of them actually people on board. 2-3 of them are going to start around the middle of this month, and another one we expect to have by the end of the month. So we're making a headway on getting positions filled, but as I think the committee may recall, we had problems with limited duration positions, and they were changed in June to make them permanent, and we've had much better luck with our hiring since that happened. We've got a project plan and a schedule in place. Instead of finishing the project and installing the new system July 1st of 2003, we're going to slip that a year. The main reason we're slipping it is because of our problems with hiring people, but also this is the kind of a system that we really don't want to implement in the middle of a fiscal year. So we are going to, the current plan is that we'll have the thing done and ready to implement in July of 2004. We finished our business requirements in July. As I said, we've been continuing to move forward even though we've been short on staff. Finished our business requirements in July, and our conceptual design is going to be done this month and is on schedule to have that finished this month. We're expecting to get a quality assurance contractor, which the Department of Administrative Services requires us to have for a project this size, and we're working on the RFP for that right now.
And this will bring down regular monthly payments to, as opposed to 90 days, we'll drop it to?
Mr. Chair, not sure yet till we get further into this and test it and so on, but we know we're going to have a major improvement. Not quite sure how much yet until we get the thing further along.
I assume at some point you'll set a goal and
yes,
we'll know what that goal is.
Yes,
we'll be able
certainly
to measure it. Are there any other questions for these gentlemen, Teddy? Sheila, your recommendation to acknowledge or see the report?
That's our recommendation. I would note just on the budget side, the project is still estimated at about a $2.5 million total cost. There was a little bit better federal match rate on some pieces of the project than had been earlier estimated, so there's about a $300,000 general fund savings there. The delay or the shift into the 03-05 biennium for completion will have another $200,000 or so savings, if you will, in this biennium that will move forward into 03-05's budget period. So we expect in the next rebalance to see about $500,000 worth of reduced expenditures for this project. It's not going to the emergency board at this point. As I said, we expect to see it in the next rebalance, but just wanted to get that on the record.
I guess my concern there is that because these are all for community-based services, the maintenance of the effective business relationships that Mr. Morgan has referred to continue to be very strained, because there's very few people who can come forward and operate on a system where, you know, they put 3 to 4 months in up front before they get $1 back from the state. I'd like to see us be a little more responsive. That might be a way to, you know, somebody's going to call that accounting gimmickry, but if you could make your payments a little faster, it would certainly make us a more attractive place to do business. Thank you very much. Are there any objections to receive the report? Hearing and seeing none, we'll receive the report. Thank you very much. John, I see you're still here for
yes,
item number 8.
Yep.
Please proceed.
Mr. Mr. Chair, I'm Jean Thorne, currently in the governor's office, but that as of October 1st, I'll be back at the Office of Medical Assistance Programs temporarily as the administrator. Hirsch Crawford, who's the current administrator, is retiring the end of the month. He was out of town today, so it was suggested that I come in with my vast knowledge here and at least do the first part of this presentation. For those of you who aren't aware, I was the OMAP director for 8 years, from 1987 to 1995. And I find it interesting that in the early 90s, we were already talking about the need to replace the MMIS. And as I'm coming back, I see we're finally making some movement. The 99-2001 legislature had actually authorized the process of initiating the project, financing a project team. And then the 0103 budget has funded the remainder of the project planning and the procurement of the solution. As I understand it, the agency has been here a number of times over the last 2 or 3 years, updating you on the progress. And so today what we're asking for is your support in our undertaking the proposed approach we'd like to take in replacing the MMIS. The budget is at a 90% federal match. We are under budget at this point for the 0103 biennium. Just would like to point out, it's interesting, the MMIS, Medicaid Management Information System, was first put in place in 1982 in a very, very different world. And it was designed really to handle paper claims of claims payment, batch processing. And even in the early 90s, we were experiencing problems in having the system do what we needed it to do, not only for paying claims, but adapting to a whole new world of managed care, where we weren't paying on a fee-for-service basis, but we needed a whole set of data for monitoring purposes. When you're paying on a capitated basis, you don't have the same level of data that comes through on a claims payment system, but you need that level in many cases in order to be able to monitor the services that are occurring. And even in the early 90s, as we talked about a replacement for the MMIS because it was being band-aided together, we said it's not quite the time because we know the healthcare arena is changing. The question is, are we going to continue down the road of managed care? Were we going to have an Oregon health plan? What kind of volume would we be looking at? How might the healthcare world change? What might we be looking at in terms of technology? Because even in the early 90s, we were just trying to adapt to electronic claims. And so much more has become clear for us in the last few years in terms of the need for flexibility, the need for being able to handle different benefit packages for different groups of clients. The MMIS really is, I mean, Medicaid is the single largest funding source in the Department of Human Services, and it really does extend throughout the department. We not only need to be able to quickly gather the kind of information we need for our own internal monitoring purposes, but certainly the federal government has concerns on their end of the Medicaid money that is being spent. So as we looked at the various solutions, it was going to be important that we be able to have systems that were flexible, that allowed us to be responsive to changes you folks here in the legislature might want to make, that the executive branch might need to make, or the federal government might want us to make. As we have an increasingly complex system, we needed to be able to handle that complexity, not only in making payments, but also in being able to have providers have access to information of what is this person eligible, are they eligible, what are they eligible for, because we have already varying benefit packages, and if we receive the waivers for the Oregon Health Plan 2, which we are hopeful we will receive within the next week or so, it means we will have an even more complex system, but it also means we'll have more ability to achieve savings by having differential benefit packages. Having web access now also provides a whole new level of accessibility or expected accessibility by providers and being able to access information on clients and on claims payments. We should be able to rely less and or have to have less and less people on the phones to answer questions and be able to have providers have direct access to information on the claims and on those who are eligible. So it's important to have that flexibility and to be able to understand we're moving beyond a claims payment system to something that goes much broader than that in terms of our ability to collect information, monitor, and report. I think since you have had reports on that in the past, and since that's about as far as my knowledge goes at this point, I think I'll turn it over to John and let him talk to you about the various approaches that were taken in terms of looking at possible solutions, whether contracted out completely, completely state-developed and operated, options in between, and then the recommended option we have selected for moving forward.
Okay, thanks. You have in front of you a handout that I'd like to just quickly try to walk through with you. Let me say something before I start that, you know, when we first got into this thing, I used to go around saying that, and Gene mentioned this, that Medicaid is so pervasive in the department that this was really the first opportunity the department's had to put together an actual departmental system, because everything else has been historically kind of built in these stovepipes around the programs and following the federal funding sources and that sort of stuff. And this is really the first chance the department's had, I think, to build a system that serves just about every nook and cranny of the department from the program side. And then what's happened really since we got going on this thing is then we've got what's been going on that you are all aware of, which is the reorganization and the restructuring of the department and the heavy move statewide toward the provision of integrated services. And so we've got an even greater need, I think, with the MMIS system to not only have it be the departmental system that I sort of had envisioned, but also to have it able to now have the information in it become more over time better integrated with other information that around clients, especially in the services they get in other programs. So that has, in fact, and I'll talk about this a little more in a moment, that has caused us to move in the direction that we want to talk to you about today. It's as our integration and restructuring has become more important. Looking at page two, what we started out and we looked at about 15 options about how we could go about obtaining a new MMIS system, and we boiled it down to four. And looking over from the left, the first option is, and the stuff above that center line that goes across the page is stuff that a contractor would do, and the stuff below the items below that center line are the things that we would do, the state itself would do. The first one on the left is, would be to develop a system from scratch, to do new development. And in that, we would basically start with our business requirements and figure out what kind of a system we wanted to build and actually build it with the help of a contractor to do a lot of that work. Moving across, alternatives two and three are a couple of variations on an option to do a transfer from another state. Every state has a Medicaid management information system. Many of them, like ours, are old, and in fact, there's now sort of a number of states are in the midst of a sort of a reprocurement cycle. I think five of them have come out this year for a reprocurement of their MMIS systems because they have similar problems with their systems. Many states do the same sorts of things that Gene just talked about.
John, are those mostly paper-oriented programs? In other words, where everything is converted back from paper to be input at a computer at the state level?
Mr. Chair, I think that it varies. Some of them, I think, are that way, but I think most of them have probably gone to electronic claim submission. But the problem is they're still organized technically and structurally the way that ours is. They started out with paper stuff, and so they still have a lot of the same deficiencies that ours has.
Okay.
The difference between alternative two and alternative three is that in the case of alternative two, we would actually operate in Oregon the system that we select from another state. And the other thing that we would also do is we currently outsource and have contracted up there in that, what is that, tan box at the top. Our pharmacy point-of-sale system and our surveillance and utilization report subsystem, which is the, called DSERS now, which is the system that we use to detect fraud and abuse on the part of recipients and providers. That we would continue, as we do today, to outsource those two items. The third one would be still also a transfer from another state, but we would have a contractor actually operate that system. And so the technical work of operating the computer and running the system would be in the hands of a contractor. And that's the main difference between alternative three and alternative two. And then moving across to four, that's what's it called, a fiscal agent, which is where you would actually have a contractor operate the system, pay your claims, and essentially do everything, including stuff that we do in-house today. And as we'll see in a moment, that turns out to be the most expensive option. And so if we could move to the next page. We've had a planning contractor that's been working with us for the last 15 months, or I guess maybe closer to 15 months, right the first time. And they have made recommendations and analyzed, first of all, they did our business requirements, which we finished in February, and they've made recommendations and analyzed these options, and they have developed some estimates of what they think they would cost. If you look here, right in the third item down says total. And so that would be the total cost of acquiring a new system and operating it for 12 years. And then above that, it is a breakdown of that total between what it would cost to develop the new system and what it would cost to operate it for 12 years. And then below that total line is the breakdown of the federal share and the state share of that same number. And we get 90-10, as Gene, I think, mentioned, for the development work. And then to operate it, we get 75% federal and 25% state. Also, at the bottom of the page, we put down an estimate of what it would cost if we just did what we're doing today and didn't replace this thing. And you'll notice that options 2 and 3 are actually less expensive over 12 years than to do nothing. The other point I'd like to make about the time is that the federal government requires us to use 12 years for our own estimating purposes as we talk to them about payback and stuff like that. But in fact, as Gene mentioned, the system today is 20 years old. By the time we get it replaced, it's probably going to be pushing 25 years old. And in reality, whatever we replace it with is likely to last more than 12 years. And in fact, if you take alternatives 2 and 3, while the total for alternative 2 is higher on 12 years than number 3, if you take the two of them and extend them out to a 20-year operation, they come together and the cost is just about the same.
John, for this purpose, what you're saying is that private-operated or contract-operated or fiscal agent operated, the operation costs are anywhere from 15 to 30% more for private industry to do it than it is for the state?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's the estimate, yes.
Okay.
And what we would like to do is proceed with alternative 2. And what I'd like to do then, if there aren't any other questions about this, is go to the next page and talk a little about the different alternatives and some of the pros and cons. One other thing I had to mention is that we sent a letter to the committee, and we also attached a fairly detailed report to that letter. And so the report that we attached to the letter was a summary of a fairly thick report we got from our contractor, our planning contractor, and then what we're going through now is a summary of the summary. So I apologize for trying to boil this down and not take so as to not take too much time with you. But there's more detail on all of this stuff in that attachment to your letter. What we tried to do here is talk about some of the factors that we considered as we looked at what way to go. And I'm not sure that it's in the interest of time, unless you'd like me to, that it's worth going through all of these. But I think that the main thing I'd like to point out is we tried to show the things that we think are kind of disadvantageous to us, and we put those in red on your sheet. And then the ones that are advantageous to us we put in green. And we looked at stuff like cost and risk and impact and timeline and things like that. And the last one I do want to explain, which we labeled DHS independence, and that really has to do, and that has a specific tie-in to that, and the second one have a specific tie-in to our need to move toward more integrated systems. Because if we have contractors on alternative 3 and alternative 4 operate this thing, we're going to have a lot less flexibility in being able to integrate our data to get changes done. Experience with other states is to make changes in systems that contractors operate can get very expensive very quickly. I know one state got, a quote of $18 million to make an MMIS on a fiscal agent HIPAA compliant. It can get very expensive to make those kinds of changes when the contractors are doing it, and we need flexibility so that we can work on making our MMIS better fit the department's restructuring and integration of data goals. So that's what that DHS independence one at the bottom means. And I guess the other point to make on this chart is that you'll notice that alternative two has a couple of greens and no reds, and the other ones all have two or more reds associated with them. And just looking at this in kind of a pretty high level sense of our analysis leads us to believe that alternative two is the way we ought to go. The next page, page five, is another way of talking about advantages and disadvantages. Just to kind of quickly go through this, the new development option. Yes, it would give us the newest possible technology because we're now able to define everything ourselves and do it in the newest technology. There sometimes is some risk associated with that, I think, as we all know. It does help us, certainly the new development helps us a lot with our interest in the integrated data and supporting the restructuring of the department. Some disadvantages of that are cost. Takes longer and has a higher risk because you're really starting everything from scratch. Again, option two, we believe, gives us the best balance between cost and risk. And as I said before, if you extend that out to 20 years, it actually turns out to be tied with option three for the lowest cost and of operation and development. And we believe that with option two, we can get some benefit around the restructuring of the department and the integration. There are, frankly, some questions there. If you do transfer something from another state, you're getting some of their decisions that they made about technology and the way they structure their system and put it together and organize it. So you are, there is a trade-off there, but we believe that it's probably a trade-off worth taking on in order to reduce our risk by taking something that already works somewhere else. And I could go through the rest if you like. I'm trying, Mr. Chair, to be sensitive to your time.
Yes, thank you.
So slow me up if I'm going too fast for you. If I move over to the last page here, basically what we would do to recap is what we propose to do is to keep our pharmacy point of sale and our decision support utilization subsystem. The DSRs would remain as they are today, operated by contractors. We would have the computer operations as it's done today, done by the department, and the claims processing would be done by the department. We would select a state. There's four or five of them that we think are possibilities, and one of the next steps would be to go through a process to figure that out, which one would make the most sense for us. And we also will try as much as we can to integrate this with other things we're doing in the department to support the reorganization.
John, the outsourcing that is discussed on 5, is that the partial outsourcing? None of that. What is that? Just outsourcing of some of the IT portions, is that what that's?
And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, on page five, which?
Alternative, on your number two.
Oh, yes, partial outsourcing is the point of sale in the DSRs.
Okay.
Yes, that's what that means, is the partial outsourcing is what we're doing today.
So the claims processing presently done by DHS OMAP,
yes.
That wouldn't be outsourced?
No, we would keep that.
And is that really a very efficient thing for DHS to be doing, is the claims processing operations?
Well, Mr. Chair, our analysis shows that's the lower cost than actually having somebody outside do it.
You know, it's amazing because private industry is outsourcing everything now. And I just mentioned to Representative Patridge, I read an article last week from the International Trade Commission where in Ghana they've increased their capacity to do outsourced data processing by 7,000% this last year and with a high level of accuracy. It's all being done at a very rapid pace. So I'm looking at it and saying, Jiminy Christmas, the private industry is moving towards outsourcing all of that out to people who are just in the business of the claim processing and those kinds of things, while the state is saying, no, that's a very expensive way for us to go.
And yes, Mr. Chair, and actually it is interesting. Frankly, I was a little surprised myself when we saw these numbers. And as I said earlier, they were put together not by us but by our contractor. So, and they're familiar with what's going on around the country, and they're the ones who put together these estimates for
us. Seems like somebody could put together a business that would do all 50 states and do so with the speed of, transferring that stuff over the Internet, imaging and so forth. Representative Patridge is recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a question on option three, or alternative three, your transfer contractor operated. I know, it's marginal between two and three, which one, I mean, in my opinion, which one is the way to go. I guess the question that I would have is in regard to alternative three, I mean, I know the only weaknesses that I see here are DHS integrated solution and also DHS independence is weak, but I think by contract, you could eliminate the weakness of DHS's independence by your ability to get out of the contract with the federal contractor, to get out of the contract with whatever contractor you were in with. And a DH integrated solution, I would think, depending on how you contract that, you could build some flexibility into that. So to me, and it also you also say that you can get it going a year earlier than the 3 years that it takes under the other program. And so I feel like by contracting and the way you write the contract under alternative three really is what would drive drive those two weaknesses. So therefore I don't see that there would probably be any red boxes or whatever. And so I guess that's my concern is, we haven't had as good a data as we would like to have, both for the department, the executive branch, as well as the legislature. We have a health plan that I believe is spiraling out of control to some extent in terms of the state's ability to pay for those things. And here we're then postponing the system for another year where we could contract and have the ability to take the system back, really, to some degree, when we wanted to. Can you speak to that? I mean, I think that addresses maybe some of what Representative Butler's outsourcing options are. I understand it'd be nice to do, but I'm also trying to understand how the operational costs work.
Sure.
And if you could speak a little bit to that, because that would require you to have a lot less IT staff at DHS, require them to be not necessarily as trained up, and you could have some outsourcing.
Mr. Chair and Representative Patridge, first of all, let me say that whether we have IT staff at DHS or not doesn't matter to me. I told these folks.
I believe that, and I know that based upon
these folks,
previous testimony.
I wanted an objective view of this,
yeah.
And
thanks, John.
And I want to make sure you know that. Let me talk about the 3 years versus 2 years for a second. The reason we this is a little bit complicated. The reason we think it'll take an extra year to do Alternative 2 as it's defined is because of the need to work on the integration piece. If we just transferred a system in with very little change around the data and how it's defined, we could do that option two in 2 years. One of the things that we have talked about internally was the possibility of doing option two in 2 years to get something up and then going back and revising it to be able to integrate the data better with other data and other programs horizontally across the department. There are a couple of problems with that. The main one, frankly, is we expect that the federal government would say, we've already paid for this. We're not willing to pay this kind of enhanced match for you to redo it. And so we believe that if we're going to do this and have a shot at trying to have what we do with MMIS be compatible with the restructuring, we think we've got to do it up front as part of the initial thing. I don't know if that's a good explanation or not, but that's really our kind of our internal thinking about why we think we need to do this as part of this initial thing. But that does add another year on. And in talking to the director of the department about this, it was his feeling that because of the restructuring that we really do need to try as best we can to bring this data together. And I think he felt that the added year was worth the investment of that time in order to meet our longer-term goals around the operation of the department.
Follow-up. Actually, I guess I'm having some difficulty then, and maybe you can explain it to me better. Between you have the DHS integrated solution line item there, and you have feasible and alternative one and alternative two, and then difficult and alternative three and alternative four. In alternative two and three, correct me if I'm wrong, you're going out to try and find best of breed kind of system that you would, under alternative two, it would be turned over to you. And in alternative three, it would be operated more so by a contractor in some functions. And so I guess I don't understand why it's red in one area and green in the other when you're going out to find the same best of breed kind of system that's out there. Why it makes it any more difficult in one area than the other, other than the fact that in alternative two, you're working with contractors, maybe as opposed to having your own freewheeling kind of staff availability to do it under alternative two.
Mr. Chair and Representative Patridge, I said earlier that there were some 15 alternatives that we looked at, and we tried to boil it down to four.
Appreciate that.
it was getting pretty mind-boggling to think about all those. One of the things that I didn't mention is that in alternative three, we would ask contractors to select the state, because we would give them our requirements and say, you come up with a system that best meets our requirements. So what they are likely to do is in both three and four is they are likely to pick one that they already run. And then if we want to have it modified by them, it starts getting expensive. And so the having the contractor in alternative three operating that system as we want to make changes and taking a system that they would select and not us select would make it more difficult, we believe, to do the integration stuff. And that's a difference that I didn't mention between those two. I probably should have.
But I guess my question is, can't you make that a requirement of the contractor that you have the availability to set up whatever parameters you want to set up to have the hooks in? And I mean, that's why you write contracts in the way that you do. And maybe I'm getting into too
much. So the difficulty goes away and it becomes feasible.
Well, yeah. you know, because I don't see your operational cost. I mean, I see your operational costs as, I mean, you have $6 million in a system that's big.
Right.
The fudge factor on that
sure.
can go across.
Sure.
But your development costs are 33% less and cost half as much and get us the information in a more rapid manner.
I'm reminded that Alternative 3 has all of the data running in the contractor's computer center, as opposed to Alternative 2, which has it here, where it's going to be, again, easier for us to share it and use it across programs.
Okay.
Which is another difference.
Well, we're just acknowledging receipt of this report.
Yes,
we're
going to
do some other things.
No, and I appreciate your thoughts.
I don't want to belabor the issue. I need to understand a little bit.
Sure.
Thanks, John.
Sure.
We've heard the report. Are there further questions, Mr. Cuddy? Or Ms. Thorne? The LFO recommendation is acknowledge receipt of the report. Is there any objection to the receipt of the report? We will acknowledge receipt of the report. Thank you very much. We're officially only about 15 minutes behind now. Ever since Jason came into the room, we've been going behind. All right, Senator Atkins.
When I wasn't here, he moved ahead of me.
Okay, and this is item number 9. Okay. Okay, Cindy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cindy Becker, Chief Administrative Officer of the Department of Human Services, and joining me is Gina Furman, who is the Director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. Did I do that right?
You did.
Great, thanks. We're here to present the report. This is an updated report on HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. We were before you in January of this year, talked about the various activities involved and the dollars that we were requesting. At that hearing in January, you asked that we come back and talk to you after we had received the assessments from the contractors in terms of what the gap was between where we were and where we needed to be with HIPAA. As you recall, I mentioned in January that HIPAA is the largest unfunded federal mandate in Department of Health and Human Services history. So we are as displeased as you are with the fact that the regulations have come down without any money. That's the bad news. The good news is that any of the funds that are associated with MMIS will, in fact, get 90-10 match. Steve Caputo is going to talk to you a little bit more about the costs and the timelines. But as you know, we are under federal deadlines for compliance with HIPAA. And if we're not in compliance, not only do we risk civil and criminal penalties, which are certainly no joy, but the larger issue is that we risk losing $3 billion in Medicaid money. So while those of you might not mind if I went to jail, I think that there would be a problem if we lost the Medicaid dollars. So we are taking this very seriously, as are all of the other states. We have the states and the private sector clearly are working furiously with this. We are sharing lots of information. We're working with the private sector, with the hospitals and the health plans, and our county partners as well, to try to come up with the most rational, least cost way of complying with these federal regulations. There are three rules at this point, two of which have been promulgated. One is the transactions and code sets, and the other is privacy. The third rule, which we think will be published, we keep hearing this fall, but I don't know when, is security. The transaction code sets is really the technology piece of HIPAA, but the rest of HIPAA really is around business practices. And privacy is a huge issue, as you well know. And we have to train 9,500 staff by April to make sure they understand what the rules of the road are around HIPAA. So we're working very hard on this. We have received the assessments from our contractors. We have a much better handle on where our issues are, what we need to comply with, and also what risks we're willing to assume. And sometimes if it takes you $1 million to fix a $20,000 item, we may assume that risk. So we have gone through and have developed what we feel is a very sound plan. We have had a review, I think you heard about this morning, from DAS, from CMS, which was extremely, actually, I don't want to say surprising, but extremely complimentary of the work we've done. We are on schedule, and we are moving ahead, and they actually asked if they could share a lot of our materials with the other states. So we're very pleased about that. I'm going to stop at this point and introduce Gina, unless you have any questions of me around the general HIPAA program.
They come back to that, Cindy, so
okay.
Gina.
Great. Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record again, my name is Gina Furman. I'm the chair of the Mental Health Association of Community Partners. And really, I'm here to just reiterate what Cindy is talking about. The counties do partner with the state on this. The counties have spent over $1 million to date on getting compliant with HIPAA, and we are very, very far from it. We have a lot more work to do. We know the translator is going to cost about $1 million for the state. Each county cannot afford to pay $1 million for a translator. We're hoping that we can partner with the state to use that. We're not sure how that's going to work yet. We're working with the state so the counties can be at the training, although the training that the state puts on is a little bit different than the counties need. So this is also quite a big expense to the counties. But the counties would encourage you to help not only look at DHS, but some of the other partners that also need to be HIPAA compliant. This is a fairly huge unfunded mandate.
Gina and Cindy, earlier when we had the report today with Mr. Latimer relative to the HIPAA coordination, it was brought up at that time that the partners may or may not have the same level of training, and I wondered how the counties fared in that, and I asked at that time how the counties fared in that process, if they are, because that's really where the rubber hits the road with 99%. One thing I don't want to see happen, and I'm gonna tread on some fairly light territory here, I'm afraid, but I'm just gonna do it. One thing I don't want to see happen is I don't want to have our human services issues cut in the state as a result of the budget shortfall, and have Department of Human Services just circle the wagons and protect its operations while all of the agents, or while all of the partners that we contract with through the contracting process, where the water gets to the end of the road with those folks. I don't want to see that go away, because that's where we're really serving people. And if you'll tell me the last time that we've had people actually being served in one of these great big buildings here in Salem, I'd like to know when it was, because we got thousands of employees and nobody gets any service here. It's out at the county level, it's the city level, it's the local contractor level that these services are provided. And I'm probably moving into some very thin ice, but I'm very concerned about that. And so when I look at the HIPAA issue and the training issue, I appreciate the good job that's being done to train staff and train our various state agencies. But Gina, as you said, you know, the counties can't afford the same kinds of levels of training and the translator box and so forth that are necessary. But I want some level of assurance that the things that we're doing at the DHS will be available either at a low-cost or no-cost basis to the people who are truly providing the services.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to assure you that we're not going to be circling our wagons. HIPAA affects every part of the service system, folks in Salem and folks all across the state. And as a matter of fact, the majority of the individuals who will be trained are folks who are in the field, who are providing direct services. As you well know, 80% of the dollars for the department does go out into the communities across the state. The training that we are going to provide will basically be training on how the department is implementing the HIPAA procedures. We've already assured the counties that we will give them all of the material that we have, any kind of media that we have developed, whether it's tapes or whatever. The problem with the counties and the state doing the training together is the counties have to develop their own procedures, and they have to train their staff on their procedures. So the fact that they come to DHS's training on DHS's procedures may not be the way they want to handle it in their county. So we will make all the information available, but the counties are going to have to customize that for how they want to do business.
Why don't we perpetuate that? You do it your way and we'll do it our way.
We would love for the counties to do it our way, Mr. Chair, but I don't think we can require that.
Well, because the local providers are such an integral part of what we're supposed to be doing out of the Department of Human Services, I'd sure like to see us be more proactive in working with those folks. And I'd like to have some assurance from Gina that in effect, on behalf of the delivering partners out there, that we are receiving as much training and as much cooperation as you feel that we can get.
Mr. Chair, committee members, that's why Cindy and I have been working together for months, saying that the train's coming. You'll find that many counties have a HIPAA coordinator on board, and they are at the top of where they can be instituting policies and procedures. You have other counties that will ask you, what's HIPAA? Myself and others at the county have sent out endless memos to county councils, to county commissioners, to mental health, to public health. We've got some counties on board and some counties not. Cindy and her staff has offered all the help that they can possibly give in getting compliant, but there are some things that counties are going to have to do on their own. RodeoNet has set up a computer software program to help with a piece of it that some of the counties are doing, and others we're trying to get training as we can. But even though our training won't quite be the same with DHS and the counties, they have to match because the codes have to be the same. So we are working together.
Representative Patridge is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, you know, like we said before, 80% of this is procedural. I mean, it's everything from how you handle a fax machine to leaving a file out to where you talk to patients, so it's not in public view when you're talking about patients. I mean, it's more, it is predominantly procedural, and that's why I think the state can provide some broader guidelines so people don't have to go through 1,600 pages worth of the Federal Register for the initial pieces. But, you know, the code sets and other things are things that maybe there's a little more help and integration on, but a lot of it just has to do with, you know, how you handle your internal procedures, how you pass paper around, make sure the file cabinets are locked up at night, things that you would normally not think of. And, you know, I think this HIPAA thing's a joke because we really haven't had a lot of problems, at least here in Oregon, that I know about. So I think it's very complex and very, very expensive.
Senator Duncan.
I heard you talking about jail and fines and so forth. But the county level and so forth, where's the who's the liability, they're responsible, so you're not involved with that. If you fail to give your guidance someplace along the line, do we have any responsibility?
Mr. Chair and Senator Duncan, it's a very bizarre relationship. There is with HIPAA, there are trading partners and business associates, and we have 25,000 business associates that we are going to have signed agreements with. The counties are clearly in that group. And when an entity signs that, they are saying they are going to be compliant. The only way we would be liable is if we knew a provider wasn't compliant and we still did business with them. But once the entity signs up and says they're compliant, if they're not, then they have to deal with the federal government.
You said a few minutes ago that there are some counties that just can't get there. So in that case, then you feel some responsibility to provide the training? I see you shaking your head no, huh?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, as I said, we will provide whatever we can, but the counties really need to take a leadership role in how they want as a county, because it's not just human services. It's corrections, it's OIA, it's across the board, and they're going to have to make decisions as an entity, as a covered entity, how they are going to institute HIPAA across the county. We'll provide them with all the materials, but they also, as I said, it goes across everything. And the other comment I want to make that I think is really important, The worst thing we can do is make this crazy for our clients, so that every time they see a provider or an entity, they've got a whole different set of forms and a whole different set of criteria. So that's why we've been working and sharing the information. If we could come up with a standardized form across the state, it would be wonderful, because we're our clients too. When we go to the doctor, every time we go to someone else, we're not going to want to have a different form. So that's why we're working with the healthcare industry and with the local governments to see if we can come up with something together. But if we can't, then each of them still has the responsibility to implement.
Let's go back to our original question today about unfunded kinds of activities.
Yes, and there's been some discussion, additional discussion. We hope to maybe be able to involve the Legislative Fiscal Office in assisting us, and Representative Hansen brought up some excellent points in that regard, that maybe we need to be more proactive with our own U.S. congressional delegation to have those folks know of our concern, and to see if there isn't some way that we can have them either extend or provide some commutation of the problem that we're getting ourselves into here. But I would like to, and I recognize this is to acknowledge the receipt of the report and to encourage the department to proceed forward with the rescheduled funds through this current session. But the problem that I've got is I'd like to know that the department is working with its trade partners in the counties, and that the counties are organized not just through the AOC, but through the 36 providers that we've got in the counties, that those folks have every bit of access to the information, including any cost savings that we might be able, as I come back and look at the MIMS and some of these others, any cost savings that we might be able to lump together in any kind of contracted arrangement to have documents scanned out to a third-party provider and then scanned back in on some sort of a diskette back to us fairly instantly, done and by other third-party providers that could be procured, or services could be outsourced. So anything that the department finds as an efficiency, I would just encourage you to be proactive, to have an open channel to be able to pass that down. Gina, on behalf of the counties and the local providers, the trade associates and business associates and trade partners, that you be open to those kinds of issues and seek assistance. And then I'm hopeful that through the Legislative Fiscal Office and the good offices of Representative Hansen, we'll be able to begin the process of going back to our congressional delegation and saying we'd like to have some consideration in this regard. Other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, Steve Caputo is also here to give you more detail about the report. Do you think you have enough, or do you want to hear more?
The report and have it, and you've given us the highlights of it. Are there other questions or comments?
I'll make it.
This is Senator Atkinson, co-chair.
And this is a comment I was going to just fly out in the hall and tell you, but a bit better to tell you on the record since we're talking about congressional support. President Bush's Commission on Mental Health has a member on it from Oregon, Dr. Knight Richardson from Portland, who travels extensively with Tommy Thompson and on behalf of the Mental Health Commission. During his training, he has a specialty in rural health, oddly enough, in helping coordinate not only his services as a physician in rural America, but also in how do you make those connections between government and rural communities. So I don't know if you've had the pleasure of looking him up, but he would be an advocate that we have for a brief amount of time at a federal level. that I would encourage you to get in contact with.
Thank you for that excellent suggestion. If there's no further suggestions or comments, is there any objection to LFO's recommendation that we acknowledge receive the report with the Department of Administrative Services reschedule the project funding approved to the 2002 third special session? Hearing and seeing no objection, so ordered. Thank you very much. And let's see, then we move on to number 10. Corrections? We're looking for LFO at this point. We'll go off the record for just a moment.